Today is the 15th of November, and this class is going to consider Chapter 4. So Chapter 4, which is Law of Causation. Now, this is important, but this builds on the previous text. So if there's aspects in the previous text that come up or that you feel you need to clarify, please do. As Yasutani Roshi emphasizes at the beginning, in order to be able to really have causation, you also have to see clearly the two aspects of equality, which is what he calls Buddha nature, in other words, who we all are, and the aspect of differences, in other words, the aspect of form. And this connects with causation because this is what he says at the end of the very first paragraph, having different karma according to law of cause and effect. That's what he means by differentiation. And yet, it's important for us to remember, though there's differences, the differences are all in the midst of interdependence, interpenetrating, interrelatedness. He'll bring that up, each moment, ongoing actions changes how so-called past karma manifests, and we could even say changes karmic streams. So that's what we're going to look at in the next two chapters from different perspectives. And often what gets in the way and makes it difficult for us is our tendency to keep going back to dualism or self-centeredness or separate individual fixed permanent self, which is what ends up causing all sorts of trouble. So both differences and equality, but it's an equality that includes differences as opposed to what he cites as government-forced equality, which he says goes against nature and fails. Go ahead.
This was a big thing when I was in college back in the 60s and 70s, believe it or not. This was the thing. Everything was about equality and, in effect, equality of outcome as opposed to equality of opportunity, which is kind of the way we talk about it now. But it was the thing. I think we've seen kind of the results of that one-sided point of view in the decades that followed. Can I ask a question about something here?
Sure.
In the second paragraph, this may be a minor point, but the first two sentences, I'm not sure how one is derived from the other. It says, he talks about ancient times, people believed everything was created by a supreme being. Hence, it was also believed that differentiation was the inevitable truth. Not sure how one follows from the other.
Well, meaning that because differences appear to exist, because they are the creation of some supreme being, this justifies the differences.
As opposed to cause and effect.
Yes. And as opposed to the fundamental equality and differences.
Ed, I missed you when you said, talked about the 60s and 70s. equality of the outcome, what did you mean?
Oh, well, there was a philosophy of the time, and it was very political, sociological, political kind of perspective, that, you know, everybody should get a trophy at the end of the race.
Yeah. But
go ahead, Jimmy.
No. We need to be careful to keep coming back to what the text's about instead of going off. But why don't you continue answering?
Well, I mean, that's pretty much it. There was this idea that everyone should have the same outcome. You know, nobody should be left behind. And regardless of your capabilities, I mean, it's a bit of a, you know, the antithesis of that would be a very Randian point of view. But now, you know, the way we look at it now is everybody should have equal opportunity and nobody should be repressed or suppressed, but it's not possible to have equal outcomes for everybody. Some people are better at some things, some people are better at other things. Everybody's different. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Okay.
However, we also have to know that the important point, at least from practice perspective and from Buddhist tradition, is that equality and differences aren't in contradiction. It's not an either or. They are mutually interpenetrating aspects of the same. And this is going to keep coming up.
In a way, it's a specific instance of what we call absolute and relative, isn't it?
Yes, in a way, but it's a relative that includes the absolute or an absolute that only manifests in the relative or the differences. See, absolute doesn't exist as absolute except as one side of differences. I mean, that's exactly form is emptiness, emptiness is form. It's not form without emptiness, but form is exactly form, is form is empty. Emptiness exactly emptiness is form, if we use such words. So, we tend to want to turn it into an either-or-ness or dualistic perspective, and then we get in trouble because we fall on one side or the other. But let's stay with the text. Now, I'm assuming that anyone who's in class or who's here now online is okay with what they've read up till now. Otherwise, speak now. You don't have to forever be silent, but you need to speak up now because otherwise it won't happen. Okay, so now we on page 36, we begin with... Yes?
That was your echo.
Oh. The law of causation means that cause and effect are inevitably one. This is very important. Now, when he says law, he means the law in the sense of, we say there's a scientific law of gravity, etc. So in that sense of law, not in the sense of law that someone's going to enforce. So, cause and effect are inevitably one. So, and yet he wants us to clarify this. He points out that in order to understand cause and effect, especially regarding so-called past, so-called present, so-called future, we need to understand this, what he calls eternal life. But it's important for us to note that eternal life is not about personal, and yet it is personal. It's the personal right now, but the personal is always interrelated, impermanent, not fixed, not separate personal, and yet it is this specific personal. And yet it's eternal. Otherwise, people get into this, think, oh, I had this soul, and I was such and such, and I was such and such. Sure, you can say that, or I will be, but that's, you could say fundamentally, Buddhist teaching doesn't go with that the soul continues after death, that there is a soul. It's all very clear. And now he starts, this is on the bottom of page 36, he starts dealing with cause and effect. Now, cause and effect is not so easy to understand, but he's going to clarify. He quotes the Buddha, where Buddha saying, if you want to know past cause, look at present effect. If you want to know future effect, look at present cause. Again, we need to see that the you of past cause is not the you of the present moment. I emphasize this because over and over people tend to fall into that. There is not even necessarily a single you. So the you of the present moment could be the result of many past yous, if I say it in such a way. The past is full of many pasts, and strands of these manifest as so-called my present moment, or at least that seems to be my present moment. Nevertheless, we say the present moment is a result of our own making, but our own, we've got to be careful, is not me. It's the result of all sorts of beings who are manifested in me right now. That's the, therefore we could say, even though the we that caused the present moment is not some single identifiable person, yet in this moment when we act in a certain way, this has consequences for cause and effect, both cause and effect now and cause and effect future. Nevertheless, you notice he wants to emphasize, and he says, we are reaping the effect of the cause that we are self-sowed. Hence our situation, whether good or bad, is of our own making, and neither our parents nor society's responsibility. Even the effects of our present everyday thoughts, speech, and actions will not disappear, but must be reaped by ourselves sooner or later. Now, ourselves, again, is subject to what I was just saying. And in fact, I've talked about this a little bit in the upcoming Dharma talk on Sunday, which has already been forwarded and hopefully received by all of you. So, and now he's further elaborating on this. Remember, none of these concepts he's giving us is not that we have to remember all of these, but in order to help us clarify so we could let go of our usual ideas. So on page 37, he starts with this cause and effect of the same time and cause and effect at different times. And it's all, I don't want to just repeat what he says. And then again, small causes, large effects, large causes, small effects, and he goes through this, and he uses simple analogies. And then he talks about atonement on the bottom of page 37, or the next to the last paragraph, whether you call it atonement or whether you, he talks about it as confession. And he talks, in another sense, it's zazen. And next he's going to, so he's keeping on elaborating on this whole, all different facets of cause and effect, and both in terms of what comes to now and also what we can do about so-called now. And then he further elaborates when he talks about so-called collective karma or individual karma. And I don't think there's a need for me to repeat anything unless you want to talk about this.
Nothing specific to confess. It is simply the spitting out of all one's evil karma.
Where do you have that?
Footnote or something at the bottom of page 37.
Oh, sangha is confession. In other words, it's a more elaborate version of what we do.
Like we do with the atonement thing in the mornings.
Yes. But it's sangha is more elaborate. It's the same as that, but sometimes we do it in more elaborate. What should I say? In more elaborate forms. But the atonement form that we use, or that I use, is what's called sangha or sangemon, purification or atonement. That's the traditional form. Notice there's nothing specific. So in the same sense that we don't list specific when we do atonement in the morning, though there are times one could do specific.
Being like the specific activities or actions that we
yes,
make.
Yes. So it's a little different. He's trying to make it clear that it's not confession in the sense that in the Catholic Church you go into a confessional and say, I did such and such and such and such, and the priest will say to you, for that you need to do such and such atonement. And then you say, and I did this thing, da da da, and you say, I did that thing. That isn't. So that's what he's trying to differentiate. Is that clear?
Yeah, I understand that part. The spitting out of one's evil karma, is that just kind of a...
it's a fancy way of saying all harmful actions, or instead of harmful actions, you could translate the Japanese word that I translate as harmful actions as all evil karma ever committed by me since of old. That's what that phrase is. That's what he's talking about.
The important thing, and you're talking about the Gatha of Atonement.
Yes.
I mean, the important line in that, one of the more important lines in that is being at one.
Well, remember, wait, that's an English translation that I use, but
that's fine. Wherever it comes from,
what I'm saying is, other people can translate it as "I now confess and purify them all."
I like your translation better.
Well, that's okay. I do too. That's why I do it. But
that's important. Being at one with who you are in terms of all the karma that you've created and you've absorbed, causes and effects, whatever it might be. I mean, the key is to be at one with it.
Well, purifying is fine if you want to say purify, because it's the same, it's just different. And if you want to say confess instead of acknowledge, that's fine. There's many different ways to translate it in English and different ways to emphasize it.
Well, I think one implies more taking responsibility than the other.
Well, okay. I am not going to argue for my interpretation.
Yeah. Okay. I put you in a bad spot. Sorry about that. But Ken wanted to say something.
Yes.
What if you don't remember a particular grievance that you committed to another individual? Is that covered in this confession?
Sure. Because you say all.
Oh, yeah.
And if you remember specifics, that's better. Because when you say all, those memories come up. And those memories will come up so that the next time you say all, you'll include those. You can't go looking and figuring it all out. Or you can, but I don't know that that's necessary.
That's one thing I've noticed about Zazen. These memories just seem to pop up out of nowhere.
Yes.
You almost relive them in some ways if you're especially during a session, you know, you sat for a couple of days, you have this visceral flashback, uh-huh. If I can say it that way.
Yes. And that's exactly the part of what you get to do in Zazen is to literally or figuratively, however you want to say, is both to acknowledge and be at one, be present and allow the experiencing of it. And also to keep noticing it. But that's what I talk about on Sunday, or Saturday, depending upon where you are. So I don't want to step on my lines too soon.
Well, I think that's something in a lot of people's lives, mine, I know, that, you know, causes more suffering than it needs to in not being able to really experience, you know, uh-huh. pain and the things that we really want to avoid.
But yet we can experience it by experiencing it as it arises. See, in a way, part of Zazen means being willing to notice and experience as it arises. And the way it experiences and arises isn't what, we don't have to create it. All we have to do is be open, and what's there, and I don't mean there in any specific place, but what cause and effect of the universe brings forth is what we need to take care of. And there'll always be until there isn't. That's exactly the point. What needs to come forth will come forth. If we're present, whether it'll come forth in our daily lives, and we'll notice where we're caught up, where we're holding, where we're, our self-centeredness, reactive habit is getting in the way, or it'll come up as we're sitting, or it'll come up in our interactions.
I've also noticed that thinking about it really doesn't help much.
Well, it's not enough. It might be that if it comes up in your thoughts, that's fine, but it's not enough. Because if it's just the thoughts, it's not really, but that's okay. Sometimes a thought is one step.
What if one thought comes up and you realize that the thought that was coming up wasn't yours?
I don't know what that means.
Well, I mean, it let's say it's a false memory.
I don't know what a false memory is. All our memories are false because they're all driven by a delusion of self and other world. But they're all true in the sense that if and when we believe them, that's ours to work with, because otherwise it results in us being entangled in all sorts of attachments and reactions.
Okay, I'm going to have to ponder this a little bit longer. Maybe.
Okay, no problem.
quite expressing myself the way I should.
No, no. And you're always welcome to bring up whether something from so-called past classes, when that becomes clear to you, as I started today, you're always welcome to bring up past points. And since you have the whole text, you can write notes in your text that to bring up something.
You know, we talk about cause and effect about, you know, in terms of a linear time frame, you know, past to the future, past to the present to the future. You might, I think I may have sent you some stuff about this. There's this new interest, this field of theoretical physics, you know, inference theory and quantum space and all this. Anyway, I won't get into all that. But there, one of the extrapolations of the theory that kind of surprised the people who were studying it was that the future actually affected the past. Does that make sense?
Certainly in the Buddhist tradition, there's that's included. I didn't see that in whatever you sent me, because I haven't gone completely through everything. So I can't speak to the science of it, but certainly, you have that in other traditions as well, but in the Buddhist tradition you have where people do things in order to have results for their ancestors. Of course, their ancestors are no longer ancestors in some sort of past, but are now manifesting in whatever way that the past actions is manifested now.
Yeah. Well, in short, in simple words, what the theory seems to indicate was that all time exists all the time. If that makes any sense.
Sure. All time exists all the time. And all pasts exist, so, well, I won't go. Let's leave that. I think it's enough to begin to start seeing that cause and effect has many ramifications and facets, both in terms of cause and effect of self, cause and effect of others, joint cause and effect, others' causes, and self-effect, that there's ways to an attempt to talk about the fact that dependent or interdependence or dependent origination means that we live in a flux of causes and effects that manifest and from all sorts of directions. And the more we look at it, the more we can see facets that are really all about, all of this is to enable us to go past narrow self-centered perspectives and perspectives that on one hand want to push for nihilism, meaning that we cease to exist at death, or on the other hand want to push for eternalism, we have an eternal self that will continue. That neither of those are the Buddha's teaching or the Buddha's experience as he related it and as other ancestors relate it. So neither of those positions and what follows from those, neither of those are where we want to come out with. So these various clarifications of karma is how to see both the fact that there's ongoing Buddha nature and yet there's ongoing changing or flowing in all sorts of ways. So that's links in to this whole cause and effect, self cause, other cause, causes, collective karma, individual karma, etc. This is all attempting to elaborate, but also to encourage us in terms of what we do and how we see the consequences of what we do, so that what we do is held in a broader light, and also that we have opportunity to respond to it, to respond to our situation without being limited by some rules of, oh, I deserve this, oh, this is impossible for anything for me to do, so on and so forth. And that's what he begins with the very next chapter, talking about so-called fixed karma and non-fixed karma. And it's important to see that, because that's the point of that we all have freedom within our so-called circumstances, and yet this freedom is exactly what practice and the Buddha's teaching is about. And this freedom allows us, in the midst of the so-called fixedness, to do what's most valuable and important, and do what's enables us to both grasp for ourselves this ongoing changing and at the same time see this, if you want to say Buddha nature, true nature, whatever kind of word, see clearly who we are and the interdependence, interrelationship of who we are, and in the light of this ongoing dependent origination. So, and that's what he starts on page 39, the beginning of the B chapter, trying to weave these together. But let me stop and see if what you read here is clear so far.
I just have this, this may be a little bit off track. If it is, let me know. But, these Japanese terms that he throws out here on page 37 and 38 and earlier too, they're somehow to express Buddhist concepts, but maybe in the Western, in our society, we don't have these kind of words or those kind of concepts. I don't know.
What words?
Well, like doji no inga and ichi no inga, that kind of stuff.
Well, we don't use those words, but we use those concepts very much. I mean, these concepts are concepts that we use. And if you notice, he uses examples which are very much from human nature. That doesn't matter, Japan, China, America. He uses very simple, ordinary examples.
Right, I see that. But I don't see in art, psychology or something, I don't see those kind of words.
Of course not, because this is a Buddhist tradition. You're not going to have talking about cause and effect or karma in Buddhist tradition. In psychology, because psychology comes from a very different perspective. For one, not all, but most psychology comes from a separate, fixed, permanent self perspective, which makes dependent origination and cause and effect problematic, except in a dualistic sense. Whereas he is teaching from the perspective of both form is empty and empty is form, and form is form and empty is empty.
Oh, okay. And it's just that maybe in Western Buddhism, I guess, they do make up the words. I mean, they have other words to translate these concepts in Japanese.
Yeah.
Right? Is that from China, and as well there may be Pali and or Sanskrit texts with these types of books.
Yes, I mean there are, but we don't have them here, and it's not important. I mean, we're not doing a scholarly examination of these, of this, so we're not going to go. We're just using the words. What he? Don't worry about the words, but we're using his attempt. He's actually synthesizing and simplifying much more extensive explorations of karma and cause and effect. I mean, what he's attempting to do is make it accessible in English so that, and then he's going to do more when he talks about the Yakujo's fox. He's further trying to clarify this, but you could say the whole of Buddha's teaching is to talk, to clarify cause and effect.
You know, you talked about nihilism.
Yes.
And I wouldn't have, at the time, I wouldn't have called my view of life nihilistic, but looking back, in a way, it kind of was. Very, very antithetical to this appreciation of cause and effect in light of interdependence. But what I think was most insidious about that point of view was this very subtle feeling, and I'll say belief, but it wasn't really an intellectual belief, that nothing mattered, nothing I did mattered. And,
yes.
And, you know, it all amounts to nothing anyway, so what's the difference? And it's a very self-centered, closing in on yourself kind of point of view.
Well, it's both self-centered and not self-centered, because if you say nothing matters, that's it's like saying that, you know, it's not self. I won't have any consequences. And yet, when you say self-centered, you're talking about I could do anything I want because I want it. That's sufficient reason, and there are no consequences.
Interesting.
So you take the same thing, and it can be flipped in different ways.
Yeah.
Notice even things like he says, where he on the, and I'll say this, and then we'll sort of leave this on page 39 at the beginning of the chapter 3b. He talks about non-fixed karma, that is karma which can be changed by one's effort, and he lists all sorts of things: the length of one's life, wealth, poverty, condition. And it's, you know, very clear that although there's karma, there's also all sorts of activities that one can do to adjust that, so to speak. It doesn't mean that the so-called fixed karma is going to change. And we could also reinterpret what even fixed karma is, because we've discovered all sorts of things that are, what should I say, changeable in the midst of what we used to call was fixed. But I want to stop here because we're coming to the end, and I want to give you an opportunity, some of you who might not have spoken up or who want to, or bring up anything else. Heidi or...
Yes. In the beginning, it's something. Did you say that Buddhism considers there to be a soul?
What? Say it louder.
Did you say at the beginning of class that Buddhism considers there to be a soul?
No, not at all.
Okay, I just didn't hear you if you did a yes or a no on that.
No. That
yeah, okay.
Buddhism made the point that there is no fixed, permanent, separate soul.
Oh, okay. I've just checked my hearing, that's all.
No, not, At least I don't think I said it. The tape, the recording will confirm it, but.
Well, sometimes no fixed permanent self, and this is what we mean when we say soul. I mean, our identity is yes. what we believe a soul is.
Yes.
Yeah.
Anyone else? Anything else? Okay, so next week we will not have a class because next week is Thanksgiving.
Oh, right.
Oh my gosh, yes.
All right.
But we will have a class the week after that. So we will resume on this law of causation, Yakujo's Fox section. The other thing is, I want to confirm, we are going to have Zazen this Saturday and Sunday, and the weekend of Thanksgiving, there'll be Zazen that Sunday. Am I correct?
Yeah.
And Saturday, depending upon what Springfield offers. Okay, good. Well, enjoy your Thanksgiving, for those who I don't talk to on Sunday, and if you want, listen to Sunday's Dharma Talk when it's posted, or listen to it Saturday or Sunday in the respective locations. Thank you.
Wish Karen a happy Thanksgiving for us.
Thank you.
Okay.
Good night.
Good night.